Was it all Scott Service's fault? Was the Dan Wilson, Edgar Martinez bump in offense a mirage? Was it real? Can it be continued into 2025? The table is set by this pitching staff for this squad this season. Can the offense fill the table with a bountiful feast for all us fans to partake in? Or will they be serving us gruel for the holidays and hot dogs from the sky and telling us to sit down and be grateful for what we have? Who's to say? Well, me. I am to say. Welcome back to the Chaos Ball Podcast. This is episode 105. The position player preview, the everything else preview for this Mariners team in 2025. I did the pitching preview. That was, you know, I think that was a little bit more fun than some of the things I have to say about this offense. I'll be honest with you. Obviously, it's no secret. This team has been offensively, I don't know what the right word is. Just bad. Just straight up bad. I don't think I need to come up with any fancy word for them being just a flat, mediocre to mid offense. Really unfortunate. But then we saw it was a glimmer of hope at the end of last season. Scott Service fired. All of his bad lineup decisions also left with him. Obviously, he was the one putting out the lineup. And then, bam, the offense was just cooking. Can they repeat it? Like, how much of that is repeatable? The good thing is Dan Wilson and Edgar Martinez are back this season. There was chatter that Edgar just was on the team just for a little fun little romp, and he might not be back in 2025, but he's back. He's back in spring training. He's just the full hitting strategist. Is that even his title? It might be. And that's really good news. You know, I think at the very least, it can't hurt to have Edgar Martinez instructing young major league ball players how to hit. And even the old ones. He can give tips to literally anyone. I bet if you gave him the bat right now, he could be like a, I don't even know, power, maybe not. He's a little old in the power department, but I bet he could hit for a decent average right now in Major League Baseball. What do you think? So I don't know. I don't know how much of it was real. Some of it was like actually tangible. Like some of the changes that were made specifically to Julio were absolutely tangible. And I'll absolutely for sure talk about Julio more in depth later in this episode as I focus on individual players, but I will just wax poetic about the state of this offense before then. But some of the changes were tangible. Some of them were totally spiritual. And I feel like this happens across all sports. I think a coach gets fired. I think a new, not even necessarily regime, because there was a lot of continuity last season. It wasn't like everyone was fired. It was Scott and the hitting coach, the Hart, that were let go. Everyone else was pretty much kept on. There have been some coaching changes since then, but last season that happened, and there was just a bump. They just started playing better. They started hitting better. The vibes around the team were vastly improved. They started in kind of the gutter, so it was getting out of the dirt for the vibes, and the team was just playing better. I mean, I've talked about this too. When you feel good at work, you're going to perform better. When you feel good in any aspect of your life, you're generally going to perform better. And you see this across all sports. This is a thing in, I think, every sport. Then a new coach takes over. I think there's just kind of your slate is wiped a little clean. And if you immediately start playing well, it's just a snowball effect, right? You just like, oh yeah, okay, we got this. Like, it's fresh, it's new, it's fun. It's like a honeymoon phase for a new coach. And then especially hitting-wise, you bring Edgar Martinez in, and it's like, okay, yeah, this guy knows a thing or two. Tweaked, definitely just told Julio to cut it out and just said to him, hey, you're good at hitting. You're very talented. Stop thinking and just go up there and hit. And sometimes it's as simple as that. And he did. And I hope he can do it all season. I think that's the biggest question is, can they carry over to this year? And they're going to have to, because this is largely the same group of players that was responsible for that September run that almost led to a playoff berth. But it did not. Of course, it did not. I mean, they had a team OPS of like roughly 670, if I look at the numbers here, from opening day to the end of August. And I mean, this started at the end of August, too, when Scott was fired. But then in September, they had a team OPS of 780. Their team slash line in September was 264, 347, 433. That is a ridiculously good line for a team. That's just, like, it's a month sample. I mean, but that's a lot of sample size for a lot of these guys. And it still stings so hard. It just wasn't enough. Because, of course, it wasn't. This team right now, as I said, the pitching staff is the floor for this team. I mean, I talked about it at the end of last season about their records in certain, when they score a certain amount of runs, and it's like they were terrible when they scored one or two runs, but they were the best team in baseball, basically, if they scored three or more. Like, I think if they scored three or more runs, they won like 70% of their games. I think if they scored four or more, they won like 85% of their games, because their pitching staff simply would average giving up like two to three a game, which is so good. So, they're so close. They're so close. And you'd think a serious team that wants to contend would look at those numbers and be like, yeah, let's add a big bopper to the middle of this lineup. I don't care the cost. Pete Alonso, what the hell is a polar bear doing in Seattle? Come on down. No. They did not do that. They didn't really do anything. It makes me upset that Jerry DePoto and company, and it's not all on him. Ownership, obviously, is the main culprit here with the, you know, they got to loosen the purse strings. I mean, Jerry has to convince them to do so, but ultimately it is the group that has to put up the money. They're making me think so many bad things about the Donovan Solano signing, and he doesn't deserve that. Donovan Solano does not deserve my slander, because Donovan Solano is a good baseball player. And frankly, that's a good signing in a vacuum. That's a very helpful signing for any contending team out there. Like, that's a classic floor raiser signing for a team, especially with some younger position players. That is a classic. Like, he's not raising the ceiling on what this offense can do, but he can play a lot of infield positions, and he's proven himself in his MLB career to be a good hitter. Something this team has really needed the past few years is just boring, normal, good hitters instead of broken post-hype guys that almost never work out, like Luis Urias. But sometimes they do work out, like Victor Robles. But we're sitting here, and this team is projected to do the same as last season. Percota has the team around 86 wins. Fangraphs, I think, has the team, let's see, closer to 84. So if you're doing the quick maths, it's around an 85 win projection, which is not a rousing projection by any means, but it's roughly where this team has been all decade so far. I'd say this might be the lowest projection of the decade. 2021, obviously, they weren't projected to win like the 90 games they did, but past few seasons it's been like, oh yeah, the computers are saying they're going to win 86, maybe 87 ball games. They won 85 last season in a division with a winner that went 88. Everything is working against me feeling good about this team. And you too, as fans. It's just kind of insane. When you look at the team itself, it's like, yes, this is a good team. Like, this is a good baseball team. It's not a bad baseball team. It's not even a mediocre baseball team. This is a good baseball team. But you look at how much they could improve and how much they simply choose not to on the position player side of the ball. And it's really frustrating. And then you look at all the other factors that goes into contending. And this team isn't in the AL East. This team isn't in the NL East, the NL West. They're in the American League West, which has a decent shot at being the worst division in baseball this season. Now, the Centrals will always give you a run for their money. Like, the NL Central is probably going to is not good. They could be fine, but I like the AL Central too. You know, you have teams that are actually kind of trying. Like, the Royals are a decent team who's kind of trying. The Guardians are doing the Guardians things. The Tigers have spent a little bit of money and have a lot of young interesting guys. I mean, the White Sox, you know, the White Sox exist, I guess. But the AL West is just, ugh. Pecota really likes the Rangers. They have them winning 90 games and the Astros 88. And then Fangraphs has the Rangers, Mariners, and Astros all within 0.8 wins of each other, all with 84. Rangers 84.7, Mariners 84.4, Astros 84.1. I think that is much more accurate of what this division is. And with just a little bit of investment, like the core of those teams, the Mariners have by far the best core out of any of those teams. When you factor in the young pitching and all of the cost-controlled great pitching that they have and their talented back-of-the-bullpen arms, and then you factor in they have a franchise catcher who's the best catcher in baseball, at worst the second-best catcher in baseball. You have the best center fielder in baseball whose floor is like a 4-win season at this point, who could have a 10-win season at any given moment. You have Randy Rosarena, who's a really good player. You have that. You're one of the best farm systems in baseball, too. Theoretically, in the next few years, this team will compete with those guys. But then still, you're just, we're grasping for something more than this. And it's so frustrating looking at this division. No chance this team could compete in the AL East or the NL West or even the NL East. There's no way they could compete. Even if you look, they're lucky to be in the American League at all. If you, like, especially you look at the league as itself and not even the AL West specifically, they are lucky to be in the American League right now versus the National League. The National League has, they have the Braves and the Mets and the Phillies all in one division. And then they have the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Diamondbacks all in one division. And then they have the Cubs and the Brewers, who are also look like very capable teams in their own right. That's eight teams that are probably better than the Mariners right now. So they're lucky to be in the American League, where even if they don't win this division, the wild card is bare minimum expectations for this team this year. Even with the lack of spending that they did this offseason. That is the huge narrative around the league. I have seen more people talking about the Seattle Mariners this offseason than I have maybe in my entire life. Maybe it's less so after, like, a lot of people were talking about them when they broke the drought. Sure. But just in terms of, like, the franchise as a whole and where they're at, usually people don't talk about the Mariners a whole lot. We're fairly irrelevant over here. We're very far away. We're in the Western time zone. We're not in the playoffs ever. So when I hear so many people and media members and podcasts talk about this team and saying, like, they didn't spend and they should have spent, everyone is in agreement It's so, it's like, oh, solidarity, sure, but it's also so frustrating. It's so frustrating. Like, who is the best team in the American League this year, just looking at it? Orioles, Yankees, Rays, Red Sox, like, all of the AL East are those are pretty good teams. I don't know what to make of most of them, honestly. They're all good. I don't know what the ceiling is for all these. Baltimore's probably the highest ceiling, just the sheer amount of talent they have. I'm low on the Yankees. Even before the Cole injury, I was low on the Yankees. I was low on them last year, and then they went to the World Series, so whatever. Rays, I think, are going to be good this year. Boston, I think, is going to be good. I think they do need more in general, pitching-wise. But those prospects coming up are a huge X factor for them for what they can do this season. And they just signed Bregman because they could, and he kind of fell into their lap. Twins didn't really aren't trying either. Like, the Royals, I think, are a good team, but they're not amazing. Same with the Guardians. The Rangers, I feel like, are the lowest floor, highest ceiling of this AL West group. The Astros are in a weird situation. Like, the Astros traded Kyle Tucker this offseason. They've reloaded, but Altuve is another year older. Their five-tool MVP potential guy, they traded in Kyle Tucker because they didn't think they were going to be able to pay him. They did get a Crawford Box merchant in Isaac Paredes, which is frustrating. They signed Christian Walker to a good deal. But still, this is not the 95-win Astros that we've seen in the past, and you just have to take advantage of that. And you can't do much else on the pitching side, so that's why I'm talking about this in this preview. You have to do it on the position player side, and it's just, they're so close. It's like they're just collectively edging us all because they're like, oh, we're very close. Look at how good this offense could be. So, frustration. Nothing but frustration. But I still think this is going to be a good team. This could be a good offense. I still think this could be a good offense. It's wildly frustrating because while they weren't very good at scoring last season, I think they were 20th in the league, bottom third in just runs per game. They averaged 4.17. League average was 4.39. And they were next to teams like the Cardinals and the Pirates and the Tigers. And the Rockies, not great. But then under the hood, like, their batted ball quality was really good. And it has been. It was like this in 2023, too. They hit the ball as a team pretty damn hard. They barrel balls. They have a pretty high barrel percentage for being a pretty bad offensive team. They just have an awful, they can't hit for average. They got the strikeout problem both in the quality of guys they acquire and their ballpark appears to be adding to strikeouts. Like, they were fourth, tied with the Red Sox in barrel percentage last year, and that's fourth in all of baseball after the Yankees, Braves, and Dodgers. Those teams are pretty decent. Their hard hit percentage was 40.5 as a team last year. That is behind the Braves, Orioles, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Red Sox, Royals, next to the Phillies. It's not, obviously, those, we've seen how bad the offense was and how good these numbers are, so it's not like they should have been way better because of that, but that's, it's just, they just got to hit the ball more. But I could go on and on about talking circles about my frustrations with the team. Who's actually on the team? So let's go to Roster Resource and see what the projected go-to starting lineup is for the Seattle Mariners in 2025. According to FanGraphs, I'm going to go 1-9 in the lineup. So this is not like by position, but I will say their positions. But I mean, you should know these guys' positions by now. Leading off, Victor Robles. Hitting right behind him, Julio Rodriguez. That is right field and center field for those fellows, respectively. In the three hole and behind the plate, Cal Raleigh. In left field, it's the coolest man in baseball, Randy Arozarena. At first base, Luke Raley. At DH, Mitch Haniger. in the seven spot, J.P. Crawford at shortstop, and then rounding out the lineup at 8 and 9, third baseman Jorge Polanco, and second baseman Ryan Bliss, and then the bench, backup catcher Mitch Garver, Rowdy Tellez at first base and DH, I'm sure. They have, Fangraphs has him breaking camp with the Mariners, and I should note, he's been playing plenty of first base. He's been playing, I think, a lot more first base than Luke Raley has in spring training, for what it's worth. And then infield depth and platoon bat at first base, probably Donnie Barrels, Donovan Solano, and then super utility man extraordinaire with massive arms, Dylan Moore. That doesn't inspire a whole lot of confidence now, does it? It doesn't. It really doesn't. Oh, I'm panicking. You know what's nice is Austin Shenton is no longer on the bench. And again, no disrespect to Austin Shenton, but respectively, I really hated seeing him on the bench. So the two big updates here, I'd say, versus like before spring training, is Ryan Bliss is now projected to be the starting second baseman per Fangraphs, which is not, Fangraphs doesn't know all the things that are happening behind doors, but that was not the case pre-spring training. And then again, as I said, Rowdy Tellez on the bench, also not the case pre-spring training because they didn't sign him until like right before spring training in February, and then he's been getting a lot of play time. Man, I just don't know. I just don't know about that, guys. I'll say it. Like, Mitch Haniger starting DH on opening day in 2025, after we just saw what he did last season, just gross. Just gross. The other notable thing, obviously, here is Jorge Polanco playing third base. You know, that doesn't really inspire me a whole lot at all. That top five is pretty decent. Like Robles, Julio, Cal, Randy, Raley. A lot of R's. If you see all their last names and then Randy's first name, Robles, Rodriguez, Raley, Randy, Raley, Wazam. I have issues with this lineup, but there is an optimistic view of this lineup. I have a pretty pessimistic view, personally, and more, I guess, pragmatic view of this team. But there is an optimistic view of this lineup that, like, gives the Mariners a pathway to win the division and gives this team, like, ceiling-wise, this team could win 95 games. Genuinely, I think they could. But they also feel like they could lose a lot. And they feel like they could also end the season with like 79 wins. This feels like a way more variance team than usual these past few seasons. And I think it's because I'm a little bit more doom on the pitching staff because they simply haven't really been hurt. So maybe it's that. Maybe I'm clocking this team wrong as a very low floor, high ceiling team that lands right at 85 wins. But the optimistic view of this lineup, and this is given that the pitching staff's going to be good, I think the pitching staff, no matter what happens, is going to be good. And if they're anything like they are last season, they will be one of the best, if not the best, in volume, per inning, all that. Talked about that in the pitching preview. If you haven't listened, by the way, go listen to that. Came out Friday of last week. The optimistic view of this lineup is, let's just go down the line here, Victor Robles. The breakout we saw last season, peripherals be damned, was real. He has made real changes to his approach and to his game. He is a corner outfielder who's going to play good defense, provide backup for center field, which is really nice. He's going to steal 30 plus bases if he's starting in the lineup most days. He's going to hit for average and be a 110 WRC plus hitter. 10% above league average, mainly on his just ability to hit line drives and barrel the ball. I don't think he's ever going to be a big power guy. Fangraphs has him projected as a 106 WRC plus, which would be super good. Like, that feels optimistic to me. And he leads off, and he's a good leadoff hitter. He's pesky on the base path. Yeah, whatever. Julio. Julio's projected for 6 war. Julio optimistically can be a 10 war player. Julio figures everything out this season. Edgar has made those changes with him. What we saw in September is real. He's going to start the year, hit the ground running, just not trying to pull the ball especially. He's hitting it to all fields. He hits 25 to 30 home runs. He's one of the league leaders in doubles, as he should be. He steals 25 bases, plays gold glove defense in center field. He has an 8 to 10 war season. He is top 3 in MVP voting. Yeah, that's the optimistic view of Julio, and something he could absolutely do. Cal Raleigh, optimistically, he can do exactly what he did last season. It feels like both his ceiling and his floor, almost. He feels so steady behind the plate and at the plate. So I'm optimistically, just do what you did last season and stay healthy all year and play as much as you did last year and contribute on both sides of the ball. Probably the most valuable guy to this team as a whole, Cal Raleigh is. Randy Rosarena. Randy also optimistically continues to just do what he's done in his career. He hit really well with the Mariners last season. He's going to whiff a lot. He's going to hit for a lot of power. Pitchers respect his power. He will walk a lot, along with strike out a decent amount. He'll play fine defense in the corners. He'll hit 30 home runs. Be a really good offensive piece for this team. Luke Raley. Luke Raley splits a good amount of time at first base and right field, left field. He mashes against right-handed pitching. He's league averaging as lefties to where they can play him almost every day. He provides a lot of value on the base pass and is just a really solid player, again, like he was last season. Mitch Haniger figures it all out again. The raw milk coursing through his veins and the 5G in the stadium, and maybe he gets a brain worm that controls. The brain worm gives him an elite eye at the plate now. He walks 15% of the time. He hits decent power, but he turns into almost a Kyle Schwarber-esque player where he still strikes out a lot, but he takes a lot of walks. And he just barrels the ball constantly because his eye is that much better because the worm in his brain is now controlling his optic nerves. And it's just an elite bat-to-ball skill for Mitch Haniger. J.P. Crawford. J.P. Crawford gets back to being a everyday shortstop. Playing fine shortstop defense. Good shortstop defense, even. And then gets back to being J.P. Crawford. I think he hits optimistic 15 home runs, but he gets back to walking like 12% of the time, working counts, not striking out a lot. That's a very valuable player to have on a team like this, and gets his leadership abilities in the clubhouse as long as he's healthy. Jorge Polanco at third base. Last season's knee injury really hurt him. Really, really hurt him. And he just got surgery. He's feeling really good. Edgar's going to help him with his swing. I think he parses down a little bit of his swing and miss that he was replacing with a lot of power. He gets back to basics. He hits 20 home runs, but he's an all-around really good, well-rounded hitter, taking a lot of walks, striking out less, and Perry Hill turns him into a good defensive third baseman because he has a pretty strong arm, but he looked dreadful at second base last year. Ryan Bliss. Ryan Bliss starts at second base a lot of the year. Ryan Bliss plays tremendous second base defense as a close to everyday player. He earns his keep and he steals 40 bags for this Mariners team. He hits for average. He is a 105 WRC plus player who's a lot of steals, great defense. That's like a 3-win player for a rookie season. There you go. Mitch Garver, he's not going to be the full-time guy anymore, but he'll DH and play catcher. He'll mash left-handed pitching. His little swing change that he's made that we've seen in spring training works. He gets back to just barreling the ball really well, drawing a lot of walks, and provides a good backup catching role. Rowdy Tellez, big boy, beefy man, gets 100 plate appearances at first base and DH and hits 10 home runs a la Mike Ford in 2023. Donovan Solano, Donnie Barrels, he does everything as advertised. He is a really good backup infielder option and cover for first base, second base, third base. He's just a professional hitter. He takes his licks at the plate. He walks a decent amount. He doesn't strike out much. Bada bing, bada boom. Very valuable 1-2 war player for half of a season's worth of plate appearances as a kind of platoon backup bat. Dylan Moore, the last player here, does exactly what he did last season. Bam. Dylan Moore plays every single position, hits for power, has some speed, will always strike out a lot, takes a decent amount of walks, has huge arms, is one of the longest tenured Mariners, and we love him. That's the optimistic view of this team in really quick fashion. Now, is that going to happen? Obviously not. Obviously won't. But if all that happens, I mean, that's a 95 win ball club. Now, some of that could happen. A lot of it, I don't think is going to, but let's start going down the line here with my more accurate views of what these guys might do this year. Let's start with the core. And I think the core of this team, and you could disagree with me, I think the core of this offense is obviously Julio and Cal and Randy. And then I think JP has to be in here. I think maybe not statistically, but spiritually and leadership and just tenure-wise, JP is the core of this team. He's in the core of this team. He needs to get back to just playing like JP Crawford and just be on the field. So I included him here in the core. I don't know if we're going to see a 2023 season from him anymore, but he just needs to be back to being a guy who can play consistent defense at short and just be a really good hitter in general. Barrel the ball. Doesn't have to hit for a ton of power. Walks a lot. All that. So I think those guys are the core, and then everyone else is kind of in the not core, but key contributor / platoon areas. And then there's just my, like, you know, all of the guys who might bounce around from AAA to the majors. But let's just start with Julio. We got to start with Julio. The offense goes as Julio goes, as we've said the past couple of years. Wouldn't it be nice if he just came out in April scorching? Past 2 years, I've said that exact same thing. I think every key to the season I've said is, like, we need a strong start to the year. You know, we need a good April, good May. We just got to open well. And, I mean, last year they didn't open poorly. The team, that is. I mean, they did have that 10-game division lead somewhat early in the season. But you're thinking about Julio, and every year it's like, yeah, that'd be nice if he was awesome in April and May, as he is usually awesome in September. And then he just comes out and just stinks at the start of the year, and he just isn't good. And it was the same thing last season. He, again, was just so poor until July. His July was great in a small sample because of his ankle injury. His August was fine, and then his September was awesome. Just almost exactly how 2023 went, just with overall less production. 2024 was his worst year to date as a big league player, which is really saying something. It was a disappointing year for him. And he still put up 3.8 Fangraphs WAR. And if you look at Baseball Reference, he put up 4.3. I think that's because defensive runs saved likes him more than UZR, I believe. But that's not too different for a position player. And they don't usually differ a whole lot, not as much as pitcher WAR. 116 WRC plus last year. Just, it was fine. It was honestly, it was very similar to 2023, just minus 80 points of slugging. But otherwise, most everything was kind of the same. Like, he really just needed to hit for more power. Like, a lot of his chase numbers was more or less the same year over year. Like, he's like the one of the biggest differences is he swung at more pitches in the zone this year, and he also missed more pitches in the zone. He walked roughly the same as last year. He struck out basically the same as last year, like 1.1. No. Why that was awful quick math. 0.9% more than last year, so really not a huge difference. He had a slightly higher BABIP this year. Interestingly enough, very similar average, very similar on base percentage, very similar weighted on base average. His slugging was just 74 points lower, and therefore also his isolated power was super low. And that was basically it. He couldn't pull fly balls at all this year. He had like one or two pull fly balls the entire year until September, and then he had a few more in that month when he hit a couple home runs and he started to look a little bit more familiar. And as the season went on, it just felt, you could see it. I think we could all see it. I think he knew it. He was just pressing out there, and it looked a little ugly at times because he would just swing out of his shoes and fall over in the batter's box. And it's cool when he hit the ball really far, but he wasn't really doing that. And then obviously the big thing was when he was hitting the ball hard, which he, you know, when he makes contact, he still hits the ball hard. That did not change. He just hit it into the ground, and that would, you know, that'd go for hits often, as hard ground balls do, but a lot of the time they'd be outs. And a lot of time there'd be men on base, and it's just, you just need him to lift the ball a little bit more, and he just wouldn't really do that. And then September rolls around, and we're in full swing of the Dan Wilson and Edgar Martinez era of the end of last season. And as I mentioned before, Julio just looked a lot more comfortable. He wasn't quite falling over in the batter's box, looked a lot more upright, sprayed the ball to all fields, was hitting line drives. And that's what he should be doing. And basically, it came out as it was the easiest possible fix that him and Edgar talked about. Was like, hey, whatever DeHart and the rest of the team and coaching staff had you doing, stop thinking about forcing yourself to try to pull fly balls. Just go out there, put the bat on the ball, and good things will happen for you. And it turns out that's true for a player as talented as Julio. So it's crazy to think that a 3.8 F4 season, like, that might be his floor, which is insane. And that is like the best, that's like 90% of all baseball players' potential, like, best seasons in the league. And that is us as fans, rightfully so, saying that was a disappointing season because we know he can do better. I mean, his composite projection this year, from all the different systems, is basically a 6-WAR season where he hits 25 to 30 home runs, steals 25 to 30 bags, and plays great defense in center field, and has like a 135 WRC plus. Like, that's a crazy, like, that's your average projection, and rightfully so. That's what he can do. So 20 home runs, still ended up with a 2020 season too. 20 home runs, 24 stolen bases, not being able to hit fly balls in the air obviously harmed his home run total. That's the lowest home run tally of his career. He only played 143 games too, still got to 613 plate appearances, but the 24 bags as well, he definitely would have gotten closer to 30 without that ankle injury. Crazy that he didn't completely shatter his ankle in that injury. Kind of insane that he didn't, and it was just a somewhat minor ankle injury, but that still is going to, you know, hamper you enough to not steal. But I think I might speak for everyone when he crashed into that wall. I literally thought he shattered his ankle and the season was over, but it wasn't. So is September Julio who we're going to see all year? Because that is a 8 WAR, 10 WAR player. And he can do that. He can absolutely do that. We're just kind of waiting to see. We're waiting to see that from him. Like, we're waiting to see just like a, he plays every game and has a 140 WRC plus, hits 30 home runs, 35 bags, puts up like 8 WAR and wins MVP. Like, we're just waiting to see that from him. And he doesn't even need to do that, but he needs to get back to, he needs to get back to slugging. He needs to get back to slugging more. The biggest failure from his season last year is, out of all qualified hitters in Major League Baseball, he was tied for what? 7th to last among all qualified hitters in baseball with 17 doubles. He's next to like Logan Ohapi, Leody Taveras, Andrew McCutchen, Shea Langeliers, Nolan Shanua, like Andrew Benintendi. Kyle Raleigh had one less than him, but it's Kyle, like Kyle Raleigh. Come on, he hit 34 home runs. So you just, like, that is why his slugging was so low. Because 20 home runs is like very easily explainable, where he was struggling to pull the ball in the air. But you'd expect him to still get so many doubles. He's so fast and hits the ball so hard. Any ball in the gap is a stand-up double for Julio, easily. And that's what's crazy, is he just straight up did not do that. And you look at, and he was 7th overall in Major League Baseball in singles. So yeah, it was just, he was just hitting singles all year. And it was so frustrating, because obviously we know that he can do so much more than that. So it's not rocket science for him this season. You just gotta hit for more power. And I think a lot of that is going to come in the form of doubles. I don't know if he's ever going to be like a 45 home run guy. I think he can hit 40 home runs. He could, but he just needs to slug more. Like, it would be sweet if he could cut the chase and the whiff and strike out less and walk more. That would be amazing. But he doesn't really need to do that. Like, if he did that, he would be like legitimately, you know, it would be like a Mike Trout 10 WAR season. He doesn't need to do that, though. He can be very similar in his chase and whiff and strikeout and walk numbers last season, and just slug more and put up 6 or 7 WAR and be the guy on this team, as he should be. So, also 5 of those doubles came in September. 5 of his 17 all year came in September. So that is what Julio needs to do this season. Not rocket science. Hit more doubles. You know, he has so much power that he doesn't need to pull fly balls as much as we think he does, maybe. I mean, he just needs to get bat on the ball and lift it a little bit. Because he's powerful enough to get home runs to all parts of the field. But I think it's just more important for him to hit line drives. Line drives translate to extra base hits. Extra base hits are very good. He just needs to do that. He should lead the league in doubles, is what. And T-Mobile's not a small ballpark. It's not the biggest ballpark, but it's not a super small one. Easy to get doubles in the gaps for him there. So that's all he needs to do. Moving on. I have more players to talk about, but he should win MVP this year. Cal Raleigh. Another guy I don't need to really dwell on too much. What a freaking year that he had. He's the best catcher in baseball, first of all. He is phenomenal behind the plate. He makes his pitching staff hum. And then he also hit 34 home runs this past season. Put up, what, 5.4 Fangraphs WAR. And was just phenomenal. It was just amazing. Amazing behind the dish, amazing at the plate, 117 WRC plus, struck out 28%, walked 11%, just 100 RBI season 2, 6 stolen bases as well. Sneaky speed for Mr. Cal. He just took everything he did in 2023 and he did it better in 2024. He played 9 more games. He hit 4 more home runs. He put up 4 more points of WRC plus. And he was, you know, even potentially better behind the dish by some metrics. And that's all he's got to do this year. Interesting thing is what I didn't know or really internalize is his month-to-month splits were much more inconsistent than I thought last season. He had a good April, and then he really was not good in May and June at all. He was very bad. Phenomenal July, really bad August, and then awesome September. Which, like, that evens out to a phenomenal season. It was just, it was less consistent than I expected from what just the numbers he put up on the whole last season, which is why I was a little bit surprised. But yeah, Cal is just great. I mean, he knows the pitches he can crush. He gets to them really well. He pulls them and hits home runs to right field. It's not like Julio, not rocket science, but there's not much to fix here, unlike Julio. There's really not much to fix at all. He hit really well in the DH spot last year, which is good to know. A lot of guys don't hit super well once you put them at DH, but he, in his very short stints at DH, I think it was 15 games, the stat just eluded me. How many games did he play at DH? Where are you? Where did you go? There it is. 19 games, 65 at-bats. There's the OPS. 881 OPS from him. So, it worked. He played more games this year. He caught 131 DH 19 and also pinch hit in 7 games. I expect that's what we'll see from him again this year. They don't really have an amazing backup catcher option, and they have Mitch Garver, Blake Hunt, and then interesting wrinkle is Harry Ford when he comes up, but Harry Ford's not going to catch over Cal. If anything, Harry Ford would DH more or play corner outfield, but that, like, we'll see a lot more of him at DH. He'll catch a lot. I think it's just going to be a pretty similar season how they handle him. What could he improve on? I mean, he doesn't need to improve on anything. I mean, he could strike out less, obviously. It's just I don't think he's going to. It's part of his game is he's going to just have a lot of whiff, strike out a lot, but he's going to hit 30 home runs as a catcher. So not a whole else for him, a lot for him to improve. It's amazing that, and so helpful that they have a catcher, a everyday catcher. It takes so much stress off everyone involved in making this team go to have an everyday catcher, and not to mention he's one of the top two catchers in baseball, so that helps. Pretty awesome. Randy Rosarena. God, I am so happy Randy Rosarena is on the freaking team. I am just so happy. He's just a good hitter. I mean, since debuting, he has literally never been a below average hitter. Last season was a step back for him in terms of production, but he still evened out to just being a good hitter. And he might have been the most excited I've, like, him as a player might be the most excited I've been about, like, an acquisition. Because he's awesome. He's amazing. He had one of the best postseasons we've ever seen in 2020. He had an awesome WBC for Mexico. And he's just, like, paired with Robles and Julio in the outfield. It's going to be cinema this season. He was really good for the Mariners. Well, he was good. I'd say he was good for the Mariners after they acquired him. He had a dreadful start, and then he got back to business in June, July, and August, had good months. And then actually, he was one of the lone guys in September who didn't light the world on fire, which was curious. I think coming into this season, it'll be good for him. He got a little taste of playing in Seattle. I think this might be best for someone to just get, like, you know, 2 months playing in Seattle to figure it out. And then coming into this season, hopefully he's a little bit more used to how everything goes in that ballpark. he is just going to be a very stable corner outfield option and a good hitter, something they've really missed. I talk a lot about this team needing good hitters, good everyday hitters. They don't need to be amazing. And Randy, like ceiling-wise, we've seen him put up really good numbers. Like we've seen him put up consistently in the high 120s in WRC+. Like it's a really good player, like 3 WAR in the corners. He just needs to be 2 to 4 wins in the corners, stable. He's going to walk a lot. Like, pitchers respect the hell out of his power, and he walks a lot, and he doesn't chase a lot either. But when he swings, he whiffs a lot. He'll strike out a decent amount, but he'll hit for a lot of power. Not the best defender in the corners, but it's not the most arduous corner to play in right or left field at T-Mobile Park. He's going to steal you a decent amount of bags. He stole 20 last season. Like, he's just kind of a stable, like, 2020 guy in the corners. But then you add in, like, how he plays baseball, and it's amazing. He had that at bat last year. I forget who it was on, but it was his. He just was so nonchalantly took 3 pitches straight without swinging or even thinking about swinging, and then just cranks a dinger to left field. That is the type of player he is. Just a big fan of his work, honestly. And what can he improve on this year? He just had such a bad April. Like, if he just has a league average, if he had a league average April last season, his end of the year stats would look much, much better. But he hit, in April and May, he hit a 143 and 178 in both of those months with 8 home runs still, but not much else. A lot of strikeouts, ton of strikeouts. So his first half numbers, even with, like, June he was amazing, one of the best players in baseball in June and July. But his first half numbers were really bad. His second half numbers looked much better. He just looked terrible. And so that's why I'm thinking, like, I don't think last season was, it was a step back, but I don't think it was a trend, you know. I don't think it was a warning sign necessarily. I think it was step back for whatever reason. And I think he's going to get back on track this year. And I'm really excited to see a full season of Randy in a Mariners uniform. Like, I really am so excited about that. And now, let's talk about the last member of the core here, and then we'll get to everyone else. We'll get to, I think J.P. Crawford is the last member of the core, as I said, but after the core, I think we're going to be talking about the solid contributors, and then after the solid contributors, we're going to be talking about the massive anxiety of the group of players that are going to probably get too many plate appearances for this team. But let's start with J.P. Crawford to round out the core of this offense, as he should be the fourth member of the core of this offense. He just needs to stay healthy. He had an oblique injury in April, hit in the hand in late July, missed more time. He was hitting the hand in a freaking rehab assignment. He just needs to get back to basics here. And basics for JP is a WRC plus in the 100 to 110 range. He needs to get on base. He is consistently a guy who walks a lot, takes a lot of pitches. He's been one of the best at taking pitches in at bats in the game. Again, I don't think we're going to see a 2023 power and production from him again, even though that was in just an awesome season. He just needs to, it's obviously, you know, remaining healthy is a huge part of this, but he just needs to start the year looking like J.P. Crawford of old, you know. He still managed, surprisingly, to play 105 games, which I would have guessed he played less than 105. But it's simple for him. He just needs to be on the field. Part of, like, as I said, Cal having a stable option at catcher, having a stable option at shortstop also obviously is super helpful. if he can pull as many fly balls as he did in 2023 with as much power, that would be tremendous. I just don't know if it's there. But he's just a pretty well-rounded hitter. He needs to just get back to being a well-rounded hitter, getting the barrel on the ball, taking his walks, being a clubhouse presence, playing solid defense. His defense is something that has been so interesting over the years. It just fluctuated in how the metrics like his defense. And he looked much better. Especially outs above average loved what he did last year compared to the years prior. So if he does that, it's going to be huge to this team. I think it's huge on the field and off the field. Because last season, I think the injury was so clear it was affecting him. Like, he was making less contact on pitches in the zone, which is not great for a player like him who really needs to make contact on the pitches he knows he can hit. And he whiffed a little bit more last season. He just was swinging more. I think as everyone else was trying to kind of press to produce, he was also doing that, but also dealing with an oblique. So he just needs to get healthy. And the projections have him basically doing that, basically being back to a guy who walks like 12% of the time, strikes out less than 20% of the time, hits 10 to 15 home runs, plays solid defense at short, puts up 3 to 4 wins. He just needs to do that. Massive for this team. Like, that is a absolute floor raiser if he can get back to just doing that. So that's all I've got for JP. And I'm looking forward. I just like watching JP too. Looking forward to having him back out there healthy. And that is it for me and the core. Now let's get to the other group of players, the contributors, the solid contributors. And I think we'll start this group out with Luke Rayleigh, and I rightly so. No, I paused the podcast at that point after I said Luke Rayleigh. I went to go get a drink of water, fill up my water bottle, come back. Computer, I don't even know what happened. Computer, not ruined. I'm back. But it's literally 48 hours later to finish this last half an hour of this podcast. Unforeseen, my computer just pooped itself. I don't even know what happened. I use a pretty old computer to record this podcast, an old MacBook, not the best. Okay, but it's what I'm working with. But I'm back. Let's talk about Luke Rayleigh. You have no idea that gap was 48 hours. So let's finish this half an hour. But I'm still here. I'm still in it. Let's talk about the refrigerator with legs. If he just does exactly what he did last season, excellent. Literally great. His last season was awesome. He did everything the Mariners could have asked him for last season. He hit the ball really well. He filled in an outfield, although he's not a great outfielder, but it's in the corners. So that's fine. He's got a good arm. But he hit the ball really well. He mashed against righties. And he came through for this team in a lot of big moments when the rest of the offense was floundering. It felt like his base running is really good too. Sneaky fast, a classic sneaky fast guy who's kind of built. He's built like what he looks like to me is a doughier Mike Trout. Refrigerator with legs, but God, he's fast. He's very fast. He doesn't steal a lot of bags. 11 bags last season, which is fine. But he's just fast, and he runs hard. He runs very hard. Fangraphs projects him for roughly a similar amount of plate appearances last season, like around 475 to 500, which is right around like bordering on everyday player, like strong side platoon who will play against lefties if they need him to. Played a lot of first base last year towards the end of the season after they had to get things sorted out with releasing Ty France. And Tyler Locklear didn't look great. And then that was pre Justin Turner. So he played a lot of first. He'll DH some. He'll play the corners. He'll probably play a lot more first this season. He's just a super useful player. A trade that Jerry nailed, at least right now in the short term, because it's something that Caballero is a useful player. But I think they. Rayleigh was a lot better for this team last season and can be this year, I think. And they really do need, they honestly need another lefty bat kind of like him to play like almost full-time DH. Because Rayleigh's going to play a lot of first. I imagine he will DH a decent amount against right-handed pitching or just play first full-time against right-handed pitching because they only have Donnie Barrels and he's weak side platoon guy. if Roddy Tellez does make the roster, and even after waiting 48 hours, still don't know if he's going to make the roster. That deadline is in a few days, I think this Sunday. Against right-handed pitching, Raley will probably play first base or DH, and Rowdy will do the other one, if that is the case on opening day, I would just imagine. If Robles, and I'll talk about him, if Robles doesn't end up hitting amazing and is struggling, especially against right-handed pitching, or even just struggling against everyone, Rayleigh's the obvious dude to fill in at full-time on the corners. And you could get a lot. There's a lot worse options to do that. So Randy and Rayleigh in the corners is not an amazing outfield defensively. They both have fine arms, and they will throw some guys out. But range-wise, not amazing. But Julio absolutely makes up for some of that. And our pitchers strike a lot of guys out, so that helps. Luke Raley, I mean, he was just awesome. He was just such a useful player last season. Very much not like a one-to-one comparison to Seth Smith, but like similar roles on the team, where I talk about useful Major League Baseball players a lot, where you just need those guys on your team to go far in baseball and in the playoffs especially, and to get you to the playoffs. You need guys like Julio and Cal and like the stars on the pitching staff to get you to your ceiling. But you need dudes like Luke Raley to show up healthy and just be a useful ball player. That's what Seth Smith was. And that's what Luke Raley kind of is. Left-handed outfielder. Not, you know, again, not a perfect one-to-one, but just a guy who needs to be like your fourth or fifth best bat as a contending team, and you're in good shape. Right now, he's probably your fourth best bat. Maybe. I'd love Luke Raley to be like your fifth, but especially because he's, you know, he's not super effective against left-handed pitching. His splits, let's see, his platoon splits last year, he didn't play a lot against lefties, only 82 plate appearances, but he hit 189 against them, 255 against right-handed pitching. He'll still slug like a little bit against lefties, but he's really not good against left-handed pitching. A lot of his home runs come against righties. So could be worse options for this team is all I'm saying. And I need to get to Victor Robles now. So Luke Raley, please. Also, one last thing I'm going to add. It felt like he, whenever the Mariners made, like, had a walk-off, it felt like he was the first guy to go greet the walk-off hitter. He looks crazed running after and celebrating with his team, and that was really fun to watch. So, good on you, Luke Raley, useful player, glad he's on the team. Now let's get to Victor Robles, the absolute joy, the absolute lightning rod of this team last season. Crazy to say, like, can he continue the magic? His stint last year with this team was some of the most fun I've ever had watching baseball. Part of the enjoyment was just the surrealism of it all. It was just like, is this really happening? And he just kept doing it. They picked him up off waivers at the start of June. He provided a spark instantly and provided that spark and energy for the rest of the season pretty damn consistently. Like, he was just a classic post-hype guy that Jerry loves to add. And honestly, I like that strategy that Jerry does do that. I would love if it supplemented bigger moves, but I like that Jerry does, and a lot of GMs do this. It's not like it's just unique to Terry Dipoto, but I love taking a chance on a post-hype top prospect, because it's in there. They might not be as good as they once could have been, but it's in there, especially when you just need a player. And he was just going to play center field for when Julio was hurt, and then he earned that starting right field spot when Julio came back, and God, did he just cook the rest of the season. Like, it was amazing. But this is the honesty hour and a half, here, so I have to share my concerns about Victor Robles. As much as he captured all of our hearts, I have my concerns. I'm concerned that he's penciled in for like 600 plate appearances. Like, I don't know if he can just continue it. Everything is pointing to regressing to the mean here. I don't want it to happen. I just worry that they don't have good enough alternatives to him in this outfield. Like, Luke Raley is there, but then that takes away from first base and DH, where they also are a little thin. They don't have a top prospect looking to take Robles' spot and shift him to the bench, really. Like, Dominic Canzone doesn't look like he's going to do that. I guess he could. Like, Las Montes is not close to being in big league ball. The other outfielders they have that are, I guess, close are what? Like, Spencer Packard will be in AAA, Cade Marlowe, Caden Polcevic, Jared Sunderstrom. Like, those are not guys I would want to start over Robles, especially after paying them. Like, I guess Miles Mastrobioni might make the opening day roster, which is crazy, and I know he can play right field if you need him to. It's some, like, Samad Taylor still in AAA, I guess. I just don't know, man. My concerns are, he had a .388 BABIP with the Mariners last season. Like, his raw stats with the team were pretty awesome. He put up 3.1 baseball reference war with this team. How much Fangraphs war? The same. Oh, no. That was total, which is crazy. He probably had negative with the Nationals, but 328, 393, 467, 860 OPS, 155 OPS plus in 262 plate appearances with the team. Insane. Hit 4 home runs with Seattle, stole 30 bags in half a year, and really didn't strike out a lot. Like, that is something I really can take into this season, which is super helpful, is he only struck out with the Mariners last season, as opposed to the Nationals. He had my wires are so crossed, 16.8% strikeout rate with the Mariners. And his career average is like 23. Didn't walk a whole lot. Was just making a lot of contact. A ton of contact. But it was a lot of bad ball luck. And he also wasn't hitting the ball particularly hard. Now, he was hitting the ball harder than he had been with the Nationals to start the year. And historically, harder than he had in his career. The biggest thing that he improved on was his barrel rate. Which was... man... I am sorry, I'm so not as organized because I had to take 2 days off to then finish this podcast, but his barrel rate with the Mariners was 6.8%, which that doesn't sound great if you know what barrel rate is. That's like, meh. But he was, his career barrel rate, man, it was like 2%. Like, it was really bad. It was very, very bad, his career barrel rate. So his barrel rate jumped up. He was hitting the ball harder. He hit a lot of line drives. Like, he was third overall last season on the team with almost a 24% line drive percentage of all of his batted balls. He wasn't hitting balls that hard, like over 95 miles an hour, but he also wasn't hitting them very weak. He hit a lot of medium speed line drives last season, which will lead to a little bit of a higher BABIP. I mean, you're going to hit a lot more singles and doubles probably with... actually, that's a recipe for just a high average, which he had, and a decently high BABIP, which he had. That's going to come down to earth a little bit, but it's hard for me to go into a year trusting those numbers. But the low strikeout, the peskiness that he provides, the clubhouse presence he provides, I think all of that does matter. The expectations for him... like, what does roster resource have for him projected this season? 553 plate appearances with a 107 WRC plus. Like, that's a good player, especially if he steals 30 plus bags like he did in half a season last season and plays good defense and can fill in at center field, which is super helpful. They're not paying him very much. Like, I think he's going to stick around all year with this team unless he completely falls off a cliff, which I don't know if that's going to happen. If he can keep up what he did last season in terms of hitting line drives, not striking out a lot, putting the ball in play. I think he's going to be a little bit of a higher BABIP guy just because of that reason. He just doesn't have a whole lot of power potential, so his ceiling is pretty limited. But I just don't – he's not going to be – I don't think anyone's expecting him to be. He's not going to be a 155 OPS plus guy. Maybe he can hit for a 300 average. That would be a big-time success. If he could hit between 280, 300, solid defense, steal a bunch of bags – that's a 2-3 war player. That's great. That's exactly what we should expect. And we've seen him do less, like way less than that in his career. So, but he was just a classic change of scenery guy, and that really worked. He has pet monkeys, which is awesome. And then apart from like what I said, apart from his on-field stuff, I think him being a chaos merchant on the base path is very useful to a baseball team that can win you a couple extra runs. It can lose you a couple extra runs like we saw last season, but that's a useful skill to be a little bit of pest out there on the base path. And I think his overall clubhouse presence, raising the vibes, again, if you're happy at work, you're going to perform better. That goes for something, and that is not shown up on the stat sheet. And I think that genuinely does matter in sports. So I hope he can continue to ride the high that we saw of him last season, and I'm just so upset that we didn't get to see him in the playoffs. He would have been an amazing October character last season for all of ball. So that is the one thing I'm very upset about. But I got more guys to talk about before I end this show. Let's talk about the last of this little group of just good players that I want to talk about outside the core. Dylan Moore. Hey, Dylan Moore, do exactly what you did last season, King. You know, he's the longest tenured Mariner now, consecutively, which is pretty awesome. Haniger is technically a longer time Mariner, but he had a hiatus in Northern California on his resume, so he's not a consecutive tenured Mariner. Salute to Dylan Moore, man. I talked about him a lot in my season preview because he was one of the Mariners' best players last season, which is says a little bit on the offensive side of the ball, which says a lot about both the team and Dylan Moore. He had a really good season. As a super utility player, he had a tremendous year last year. He just played a little bit too much. I worry he might play a little too much this season, but it seems like Ryan Bliss might get that opening day second baseman nod, which pushes Dylan Moore to his best role. And Dan Wilson has talked about this too. He's talked about giving the opportunity to Bliss and keeping Dylan Moore in his role as a... It's an interesting utility guy. He's like almost a 3-2 outcome utility, super utility man, which is super interesting. He's got huge arms, as we all know, big biceps. He just needs to kind of do the same thing. I mean, he's going to play everywhere. He's going to play the corner outfield. He's going to play a lot of infield. And him being the longest tenured Mariner, I think there's definitely some de facto leadership qualities there in the dugout for him, which is cool. And yeah, Dan Wilson's talked about that's his best position. They don't want to have him as a full-time starter because he's just more valuable to the team as a utility man. And I'd agree. And I don't have much else to say about Dylan Moore. It was an awesome year last year for him. Should be another useful player for this team this season. So now let's get to the rest. Now let's get to the rest of these guys. I have these marked as the rest. Let's talk about Polanco and Mitch Garver. Come to Seattle, awful years at the plate. Sound familiar? I mean, come on. Like, how many times have we seen this? Now, I do have slight optimism that they'll hit better this season. Because now you'd think they are better adjusted to hitting the ball in Seattle. At the very least, they have some reps to go off of and look back and see what worked and what didn't. Generally, guys have hit better the second year after coming to Seattle. It's a big adjustment for sure. And generally, guys do hit a little bit better. Polanco, again, can you look at it as like glass half full, glass half empty? Was his knee really hampering him last season to the point where he just fell off a cliff offensively and he got surgery this offseason and looks healthy? Or coming to this year, did he just get surgery and now he's never going to be the guy before the knee injury? You can look at it both ways. He's had a good spring for what it's worth. Mitch Garver also had a good spring before getting hit in the hand. Thankfully, he didn't break his hand. That would have sucked. Garver, it looks like there's going to be less expectation for him to be the full-time DH. That's at least helpful. I think he'll be the full backup catcher and probably DH here and there against left-handed pitching, resting Luke Rayleigh or, I guess, you know, opening day Mariner Rowdy Tellez. And Mitch Garver just, I mean, it looks like he shifted his mechanics a little bit in spring. His hands were lower than they were last season. It looks like he cut even more off of his swing path, which there wasn't much to begin with. Very simple approach from him. Honestly, everything was there for him at the plate last season. Strikeouts jumped up at home because they do for everyone in that ballpark. But he still, like, he still walked a decent amount. It was just he didn't hit for any power. Like, none at all. His slugging fell off a cliff last season. He still walked a good amount. The strikeouts jumped up a lot, but he still walked a good amount. It just was, he just could not hit the ball hard at all. He just couldn't. So I don't even know what to expect from him this season. He's making a good amount of money for this team. He needs to just provide backup catching and mashing against lefties, and that's fine. They still need a bigger bat in this team somewhere in the infield. I just don't think it's going to be Bart Garver. And then Polanco, can Polanco play good third base defense? Verdict's out. Can he maybe cut back on his full-on power approach and go more for line drives, a la the Edgar Martinez method, hit the ball up the middle and be a useful player that way? I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know what to expect from either of those players this season. I'm a little skeptical about Polanco moving to third and even being a good offensive player. I hope he can be. We've seen it before, is the thing, where you can rest your head on Polanco. He's not that old. He's like, I think he's going to turn 32 in the season. We've seen him be a productive big league player for many years prior to last year. So can he just adjust, come into the year with a healthy knee? And that would be a huge boost for this team if he was even league average defensively and could hit 10% better than league average at the plate. That is massive for a team that desperately needs that. So he does have a 450 plate appearance vesting option that would go into next season and trigger that. So we'll be paying close attention to that all season. And let's get to Bliss. Ryan Bliss. I got doubts about the bat. I'll be quite honest with you. Seems like he's going to play a lot at second base, at least to start the year. Seems like he'll play good second base defense. Steal plenty of bags if he gets on base enough. Can he hit enough to justify his play time? There is that trade-off. He just needs to hit enough to play. But can he do it? Especially if this team isn't winning and he's not hitting, he's going to be one of those guys that is at risk of up and down all year. I really hope he can hit. I mean, even if he's just league average at the bottom of the lineup, that's still fine for this team. I wish this team maybe they'll go out and trade for Brandon Lau or something. That'd be cool. I wish they paid Marcus Semien 4 years ago, but they didn't. I don't know. Not a whole lot of MLB playing time to go off of. He's definitely got a little bit more pop than you think because of his size, but I just don't know what to think about him at all. Prospect graders are not super high on him. I don't know. I got to zip through these last few guys. Donnie Barrels. He'll be the main first baseman platoon. Can play second and third. Probably will a little bit. Talked about him a little bit earlier in the show and on a couple podcasts prior. Useful player. Floor raiser. My concern, and I talked about this when he was signed, is that when the season is over, and let's say he underwhelms, which wouldn't be shocking for a free agent bat coming to Seattle to underwhelm, we may look back and say, why wasn't he on this team in 2023 and 2024? He is 37, so banking on his production from last season is inherently more risky than if he was like 30. On paper, super useful signing if he can continue being a really solid hitter on a weak side of a platoon, which he has been pretty consistently now for a few years. It's just he's 37. I wish he wasn't one of the big signings of the offseason, but he is, unfortunately. So we'll see. I do think he'll be a fine, useful player for this team. That is what I will say about Donnie Barrels. And now let's get to the other fringy guys, outfielders, Canzone and Haniger. the other outfielders and DH options of this team, it's just bleak, man. It's so bleak once you get past the seven useful position players on this team. And that's where this team gets sunk. It's like those seven guys are pretty useful. It's just the depth is so bad. Canzone at least offers a little bit of upside. At this point, Haniger doesn't offer me anything. I've been so negative about him all offseason. And then he started posting chemtrails and conspiracy stuff on his Instagram, and it just confirmed that I appreciate what he's done for the team, but I don't feel a need to support him. And he shouldn't be on this team. He's making so much money. $17 million to this organization is like $40 million to a less broke organization than the Mariners. Broken mindset, I should say. Looks like he might start the year on the IL, which Miles Mastrobioni is also included here. It looks like he might break camp with the Mariners with Rowdy Tellez if Haniger does land on the IL to start the year with a shoulder injury. So we'll see what they do with Haniger. At some point, they might have to make the decision to just cut ties with him. If he's anything like he was last year at the plate, that is a net negative player on a team in a contention window. You can't continue to employ him if he's going to hit that poorly and offers zero defensive or base running upside. So that's still where I stand with him. They're not going to be able to trade him. There's no chance they trade him without attaching good prospects, and they shouldn't do that. It's better for them, opportunity cost wise, to just eat the money and cut him. And if they're going to trade prospects, trade them for a great player instead of getting likely a decent-ish player and trying to offload Haniger in a trade. Mastrobioni, got nothing to say on him, man. Not going to talk about him. Canzone's big issue, everyone knows, is swing and miss. It's not a secret that he couldn't hit breaking balls. He hasn't been able to since he's had his short time in the big leagues past two seasons. He saw a very large percent of them last year. The things that give you like a sliver of hope for him is just how hard he can impact the baseball. His 90th percentile outcome is probably a left-handed hitting DH slugger who is a guy who will strike out a lot, but he can hit the ball so hard and so far that gives you a little bit of hope. But we just haven't seen him put it together and not swing and miss a ton at secondary stuff. I just need to see it. I know he can hit the fastball, like 110 miles an hour plus, 420 feet plus. I know he can do that. He's just got to make more consistent contact with breaking pitches. And there's a path for him to be a full-time player on this team. Honestly, if Rayleigh's a first baseman against right-handed pitching and Canzone can manage to rake against right-handed pitching, like, that is a full-time player, more or less. Maybe he shouldn't be, but this team doesn't have that many other left-handed hitting options. And Cole Young is a completely different player who wouldn't be DHing, so he doesn't block. Like, Canzone doesn't block a potential Cole Young call-up. He doesn't block a potential Harry Ford or even Ben Williamson call-up at all. So there's a clear path for playing time for him. He just has to compete with, like, Rowdy Tellez and Miles Mastrobioni and Austin Shenton and Cade Marlowe, basically. That's it. That's not a whole lot of competition. So I'm skeptical, but there's a path to a lot of playing time for him if he can just continue impacting the baseball and whiff less. It's not rocket science, but like trying to hit a baseball looks impossible, so I can't just say hit the baseball better. And that's it for the guys I really wanted to focus on. Like, the others on the outside looking in here, like Rowdy Tellez, man, he sounds like he's going to make the opening day roster. I don't think he's very good. He'll hit some home runs. He's a big, beefy boy. We'll all take some joy in that for sure. But in terms of winning baseball games, he's not going to be a super valuable player to the team. I hope he is. That'd be sweet, but I just don't think so. There's Tyler Locklear. We'll see. Similar-ish to Canzone. He can hit the ball really hard. He can play first base. Can he not whiff 50% of the time? We'll see. Austin Shenton, sure. Leo Rivas had some good moments with the team last year. I think he's useful shortstop depth at AAA. I'll say that. Blake Hunt, well, any injuries to Garver or God forbid, Kyle Raleigh, Blake Hunt is likely the first one to come up before Harry Ford, I imagine. I don't think they're going to want to push Ford at all, unless that comes later in the year and Ford has been like raking in Tacoma. I can see Hunt coming up before him and like a potentially a DFA guy. Cade Marlowe, I mentioned, is like, I just don't know if he's good. I just don't think he's good. And then the guys with no service time that could come up, I've mentioned Cole Young, Harry Ford, Ben Williamson, Spencer Packard, another outfield option. I wrote with a big question mark, Laz Montez, because like Canzone, there's no one really blocking him from left-handed hitting outfielder slash DH. He hasn't been above high A. There's just a world where what if he rakes at Everett and then double A and then goes to triple A in like September and hits six home runs in a week and the Mariners are battered and need something and they call him up in September or late September. I mean, what if that, I don't think he'll come up. Cole Young and Harry Ford are the guys to potentially make an impact this year. And they'll be the first of this new crop of young guys from the farm, young position players, to see if the team can develop hitting. We'll see. Like, Cole Young offers something interesting in terms of very contact heavy, talented hitter who can play shortstop and probably is going to end up at second base. And then Harry Ford, I've talked about a lot. Really unique build for a catcher. Can he catch? We'll see. He took some reps last season in corner outfield, which seems like a good place for him to land, if not catcher. Interesting flyer for him they might take out is just coming up the DH a little bit, because he's shown at every level he can hit. Even in the WBC he showed he can hit. He's a very talented hitter. He has a good eye for the plate. He has really good in-game power. He is very athletic for a catcher, so he can run the bases really well. We might see him this year out of necessity, and I don't know, it could be too early for him. I don't think it's too early for Young. This year makes sense. If he hits well in AAA, it makes a ton of sense for him to be on the team at some point, because they're weak up the middle, and injuries will happen. And so I think we see Cole Young, and honestly, I do think we see Harry Ford, barring any injury to him, just out of pure necessity, because they're the depth. They're like the potentially impact depot. Oh my God. They're going to get called. Cole Young is going to get called up in July because someone got hurt in the middle infield. And DePoto's going to talk to the media about it. And I know he's going to say, yeah, this is like a big trade at the deadline. You know, when GMs love to say calling up a prospect is like acquiring a guy at the deadline. He'll say it. Mark my words. It'll just be a lot. It's a lot to provide solid major league depth for a contending team in a bad but very competitive division and bad but competitive American League. It's a lot to put on prospects that aren't blue chip guys. These are good prospects. They're not a Julio Rodriguez or even like a Cole Emerson, who is very highly ranked at the moment. He's farther off than Cole Young. Cole Young will get an opportunity before him. It's just a lot to put on guys to immediately come up, and like they will need to make an impact. The Mariners won't give up on them if they don't, but a lot of the season could hinge on them late in the year of coming up and making an immediate impact at the plate if they are needed. So we'll see. But I'm going to call it here. Thank you for listening to this hour and a half plus in the background 48 hours of podcast. I may put out another quick little pod right before opening day if my schedule allows it. We'll see. But otherwise, opening day is in, when this drops, 6 days. We're close. I'm talking about Mariners opening day. I know the Japan series happened, but we're here. I'm excited regardless of how skeptical I am of this team this season. I'm excited to watch Mariners ball again and talk about it with all of you. So thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week. Go Mariners. And since it's March Madness, go Zags, baby.